Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Baxter Holmes will be with us in 15 minutes, and he will not talk about quarterbacks. Because if he does, I will hunt him down and beat him.
I'll find a way.
No, you won't. Justin Fields is going to be where he's at. Mm-hmm. You know, the Bears will get a far bigger return trading down because they need help everywhere. I mean, you don't get to be 3-14 if you're set anywhere. So that's most likely what's going to happen there. And then you know that, you know, Young will go 1, Stroud will go 2, Richardson, they're calling, you know, the 5, you know, Levis, high single digits, low double digits. Mm-hmm. Then after that, who knows? But they also know that 2 years ago when everybody was raving about the quarterback class because it was so deep, turns out that it was a mile wide and an inch deep because nobody's hit the ground and excelled yet.
You're starting to see Trevor Lawrence, but Trevor Lawrence was supposed to be the most thing.
Yeah, he was. Well, he was the can't miss guy. Mm-hmm. But everything after that, meh.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's. All I'm saying is, Jimmy Garoppolo, A, shouldn't be out of the question, and if he's available, if they have to make a hard decision on it too, because Purdy can't go. He makes more sense than anybody else.
If Purdy can't go, then yeah. I don't even know if anybody would go back on that, though. Would argue that.
Oh, I think there are tons of, you know, psychotics out in the street who would argue that.
If Purdy couldn't
they wanted Garoppolo hung from a lamppost when he was starting. I mean, there is a level of hatred for him that defies all logic. And it's always going to defy logic because those people are pot committed.
But couldn't I say that there's also a level of love for Jimmy Garoppolo that defies logic? There are a lot of Jimmy Garoppolo.
There are. I don't know what the proportion is, but they'll love him a hell of a lot more once he's gone. Mm-hmm. Because they hated Alex Smith until he went to another team. Then they got nostalgic for him.
Right.
That's how this works. It's when you're the starting quarterback here and you don't have a Super Bowl ring to hang on your bedpost at night, you're unsatisfying. You're a disgrace to the franchise. When you leave, they'll go, "You know what? He wasn't bad."
Yeah.
It's a psychotic kind of view, but it throbs out there. These teams, we don't like you when you're here, but once you're gone, man, you're golden.
Yeah, it's a good point. Looking again, though, at some of these.
Oh God,
I'm just.
You're gonna go blind.
No, I'm not. I guess. Would you ever subscribe to maybe if everything is about offense, right? And now we're hearing more than I've heard in the past about these cold weather situations. Would there ever be a thought, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years from now, where every stadium has a dome option? A dome option?
Probably. But
it's all about offense.
But the beauty of that is in 30, 40, or 50 years, I'll be dead. And I don't think there's anybody on your beloved text line who would think that's a bad idea.
Let me check. I'll come back.
No, don't bother to check. It'll make you blind. You'll get cataracts just reading that nonsense. No, but it's... The fact is that football is going to become, in 30 years, it's going to be simply a studio sport. You won't even need fans at that point. They'll just... It'll all be television. You know, you just have pixelated audiences.
What?
In 30, 40, or 50 years?
We already saw that during the pandemic.
Yeah. But they hadn't perfected what they want to perfect, which is to gouge so many people for watching it on television. They will eventually want to make that a, that's the only option you have. That way they don't have to hire ushers or, you know, concessionaires or security. In fact, you don't even have to build a stadium. You could just do giant studios. I mean, if we're gonna play what's gonna be like in 30 or 40 years,
sure,
that's certain. That wouldn't surprise me a bit.
There are still going to be people going to games.
You speak with such certitude.
There will be. Now, if you said 2,000 years, maybe.
In 2,000 years, the meteor's going to hit, and we won't have to have this argument anymore.
Yeah. Well, we'll just have it on a different planet or something.
No, we won't. Who knows what's going to happen in 30 or 40 years? But for right now, the whole cold weather thing anyway is just a dodge. Mm-hmm. You know, does anybody honestly think that the Raiders teams that Derek Carr played on could have functioned in warm weather but not cold weather? No, they couldn't function anywhere.
Right.
I mean, that the whole Derek Carr can't win when it's under 40 degrees. He's not the only guy on that team. You know, why isn't anybody saying, well, Max Crosby can't win it under 40 degrees? It's just nonsense.
Well, that's why they get paid the big bucks, though.
It's not why they get paid the big bucks. It's because there are so few of them. And Derek Carr was going to be one of them. In fact, got a $40 million contract from a team that basically threw him through a window after 15 games. He said, we can't even look at you anymore.
After making the playoffs the year prior.
Yeah. And just because the one thing you cannot guarantee with all the talk about quarterbacks and guys getting hurt and yada, 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 you can't guarantee the rationality of an owner scorned. And the reason why Derek Carr got benched, and Vic Tafer wrote about this in The Athletic, is that Mark Davis couldn't stand to look at him anymore. He realized he gave him too much money, gave him a no-trade clause in the contract. He felt like he got fleeced and he wasn't getting wins out of him. And so he just turned on him and finally said, no more. I don't care if it's Jacoby Brissett. Just not him anymore.
Sometimes that's what you need, though. I don't
what's
think
your,
it's right.
But what's the alternative that they have?
I don't think it matters.
No, it does matter. It does matter. Because if you're saying that, quote, the most important player on your team is that disposable, you're telling everybody else in that locker room, you're far more disposable than even he is because you're not making $40 million.
But, Ray, you talk about being scorned, right? We know that there are plenty of relationships out there where somebody has scorned the other person and you've tried to go to marriage counseling. You've tried to bring the spark back. You've tried different things, but all you can remember is when whatever wrongdoing that you feel they did to you and you can't get it out of your mind.
But
whether it makes sense or not, because nobody told Davis to pay him that money.
No, Davis wanted to pay him that money.
Right.
But the fact is, being a quarterback is different than being a spouse in that you can live alone if you want, but if you're running a football team, you can't not have a quarterback. Who's your quarterback right now?
They're kicking tires on some.
You know what they got? Tires.
They got a lot of tires.
That's what they got.
They got a lot of tires, and they got a lot of options. Ray, big weekend for the Raiders at the Combine. It is.
I want your phone number. I'm going to call your wife. I'm going to break up this marriage for her good.
I'm just saying.
She should confiscate your remote.
I think that Derek Carr represented at this point in time, whether fair or not, and I got to be careful here because his brothers might be listening. They're all over all areas of the media. He represented the hopelessness of the franchise, whether fair or not. Actually, unfair.
He unfairly got targeted for that when, in fact, Josh McDaniels represents that. Mark Davis represents that.
Yes.
He's
the owner.
Their history, you know, going back to their last Super Bowl appearance, absolutely represents that. To dump any more than about 5% on Derek Carr is outrageous. Not because he's a great quarterback, but because nobody could win there. Tom Brady couldn't win there. Patrick Mahomes couldn't win there.
Now put Derek Carr on the Niners. These last couple years.
Can Derek Carr keep the Chiefs from scoring 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter? No.
No.
Can he avoid dropping an interception in the end zone against the Rams? No. And this past year, he'd be the guy being carted off the field.
Oh, without a doubt. Because he cannot.
Because the Philadelphia Eagles defense was going to terrorize whoever was back there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and in many cases, yeah, quarterback makes a huge difference. In the case of the 49ers, doesn't really. And you'd be paying him $40 million to ride that cart.
But you say that
with complete confidence.
When you watched Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy, did you see a difference?
Did I? Not a huge one. And you know what? We will continue this later because we have to go to a break. Otherwise, Grandy will have an aneurysm. Which, while amusing in its own way, you don't get to see on YouTube. So we'll do this instead.
Thanks, Ray.
You're welcome, Mark. We are sponsored by Inn at the Tides. Book your getaway to Bodega Bay at the iconic Inn of the Tides. Their midweek winter special offers the lowest rates of the year, starting at just $199 a night. Enjoy stunning views, refreshed rooms, and free breakfast. Man, I could use one of those right now. Book now at InnAtTheTides.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.
Back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
If you're driving, don't do this yourself, but hand the phone to your pal and make sure that he will subscribe to Damon and Ratto on the Odyssey app or wherever you happen to find your favorite podcast. That way you don't have to pull over and stop the car. And if you haven't already, then absolutely stop the car and get that done. We are back. Ratto, Alan Stiles, we've been beating the quarterback debate to death, so we need somebody else who will revivify it for us. Kalen Kaler, NFL expert, following the league for well nigh on years, and broke story last week about the level of dysfunction in the Russell Wilson Seattle Seahawks, and. You know, since then, I think you've been covering the competition committee and the lunacy they're operating in. First of all, Kalen, welcome to the show again.
Ray, hi, how are you?
I'm weeping bitter tears.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. What do you want to start with? The competition committee, the Russell Wilson stuff? I mean, you caught some flack last week about it, but has that died down as people have sort of acknowledged that Russell Wilson is a different kind of character than he's portrayed himself to be?
Yeah, well, I think today Pete Carroll and John Schneider were both asked about our report from, you know, Seattle media, and neither one of them, they both had slightly different responses, but neither one of them denied it. You know, they kind of were like, I think John said, it's water under the bridge or something, and Pete was like, I'm going to stand by my players, like the players that he currently has. So neither one of them denied our report that Russell last February, had went to Seattle ownership and requested that Pete and John both be fired. So I thought that was pretty telling, because obviously the Seahawks did not comment for our story. So, you know, I didn't know what they would say on the record if they were asked about it. So that I thought was very interesting. And I do think you're right. Like, when it originally came out, we did get, you know, people saying, oh, another like hit piece on Russell Wilson. But we were actually extremely fair to Russell in the story. And we specifically stayed away from all of the narrative surrounding him that we're all very familiar with, that his, you know, former Seattle teammates have put out there. We were like, we made a conscious choice to like not get into that, because we wanted to understand the football side of what went wrong. Like, why was Russell as a football player struggling this year? Why were the Broncos as a whole so bad on offense? And so that's really what we started. That was kind of our frame for reporting this. We didn't even wade into, you know, the typical Russell dialogue about whether he's a phony or a fraud or, you know, his strange personality.
In terms of the report and its aftermath, how much do you think it will affect what his, not his relationship with Sean Payton, the new coach in Denver, will be, but how much Payton will shorten his leash to try to get a semblance of the form he used to have in Seattle?
Yeah, I think he's going to shorten it a lot, because in his first public appearance as Denver's head coach, he, you know, was asked about Russell's team, and he was like, I'm not familiar with that, like a player having a personal staff in the building. And he said, that won't be happening here under my watch. So he already, like from the very first things he ever said as the Broncos head coach, he made it clear that there will be some boundaries for Russell. And I think that's going to be really good, because that was the issue with what happened this year. Like, yes, Russell has declined in some ways physically, but I don't think he's like beyond repair as a quarterback. I think what happened was, and what we learned from our reporting, is that Nathaniel Hackett is a first-time head coach, and because he was slightly scarred from, you know, transitioning Aaron Rodgers to a new offense in Green Bay, he made a conscious choice to include Russell and empower Russell in the Denver Broncos offense. And when he did that, he just gave him too much control. And Russell was bringing Hackett a list of plays to sign off on, to include in the offense. He was changing the cadence all the time, to the point where the offensive line had no idea what was going on, because they weren't able to practice it enough. And, you know, he had his personal staff in the building, which didn't seem like it was going to be a problem until, you know, we reported that the last 2 weeks of the season, his personal staff, Broncos leadership met with Russell to see what they could change. And they agreed that, you know, for the last 2 weeks of the season, he was not going to use his second floor office in the facility, and his team would no longer be in the building. So it clearly became something that created a disconnect between him and his teammates, based on the fact that Broncos leadership met with Russell and brought this up, and they all agreed, yeah, we're not going to do this anymore for the last 2 weeks of the season. And it seems like they're not going to do it anymore going into next year.
Kalen, you wrote a piece about the pushing of the quarterback and how the NFL is looking to maybe get rid of that. I don't know if Ray coined this term or if I'm late on it, the tush push. But can you give us your argument, I guess, for it, to keep it, and the argument to get rid of it? Because I'm a bit torn.
Yeah. I mean, I'm shocked that it's even on the agenda. I think I'm biased because I'm like so obsessed with the play that I can't see why it's a problem. I mean, The argument, I'll start with the argument against it. The argument against it is like a forward-looking argument that at some point this could lead to injuries, not just on offense, but on defense. When defenses are trying to stop this play, you'll see a lot of times, and this is not even like a push sneak. It's not unique to the push sneak, but all sneaks in general, any variation of a quarterback sneak, you'll see the defense leaping over the offensive line. And they'll send like one player doing that. And obviously, you know, that puts that player at an injury risk. It also puts the quarterback at a risk of getting like speared in the head. So yes, sure, there is like some element of injury risk to this, but I don't know that there's more of an injury risk to the push sneak than there is a regular sneak. Although there is a situation where there used to be like some pushing going on field goal plays, and they got rid of that because they thought it would lead to injury with the pushing between the offensive and defensive line. So there could be an argument for that. But as of right now, there is no injury evidence because none of the Eagles got hurt on this play. And other teams who ran it, as far as I know, it was like the Bills, the Ravens, and the Bengals, I think, who also ran similar plays like this. And I don't think anybody got hurt on those either. So it's kind of like tracking it forward to see if there is an injury risk, which right now, there's not enough evidence to say that there is. And the other argument against it, which I think is the funniest argument, and the one that I've heard like the most loudly, is that it's ugly because it looks like rugby. And I don't understand what the problem with that is, because the last time I checked, football is a product of rugby. So, you know, I don't know why it's a bad thing that football would resemble rugby. Obviously, if you're running this play 40 times in a row and that's your entire offense, sure, I don't know that any of us would really want to watch that. That's
You'd
not
be the 49ers.
Anymore. Right, yeah, right. It's not exciting anymore. It's not a good offensive product. And obviously the owners, they care about what everything looks like. You know, that's obvious because of taunting penalties, because of the uniform description on like how tall your socks have to be. You know, we know that the owners care about optics. So I think the main reason that this has been put on the docket is because it looks bad. Which is really funny to me.
Of all the recommendations that people have made to alter the rules this year, how many of them have a chance of being enacted? I mean, the one that I think caught the most eyes was the making roughing the passer reviewable. Does that have a chance of getting changed? Does anything have a chance of getting changed?
I think... I don't know. I mean, that's a tricky one, the roughing the passer reviewable, because we all know what happened when they made pass interference reviewable. What was that, 3 years ago? It was like an absolute disaster. So I think that roughing the passer reviewable would also ultimately lead to an absolute disaster where, you know, you're not consistent with your rulings, and slowing it down actually makes it harder to officiate. I don't know if that's going to have enough momentum. I don't have a good feel for that one right now, but I do think the experience of the pass interference debacle may, reflect what we're going to see. So I think people might be inclined to vote against that because of how badly it went when they tried doing that for the one-year experiment with pass interference. I know they're talking about the QB3 active thing again, adding... being able to dress a third quarterback and having it not count toward your roster total. I feel like that might have a good chance just because of how visible and terrible those situations were this season, you know, especially the 49ers, obviously, when, that second quarterback gets hurt and there's nobody left. I think that one might have a shot. And then there's so many things that they're looking at. I mean, I think there were a bunch of different health and safety topics that they went over yesterday as well.
You mentioned the third quarterback thing and how it's got a chance of passing in part because the 49ers basically threw quarterbacks into a meat grinder all year long. I wanted to talk more about the third quarterback market out there and the veteran free agent market. Is there anybody that, frankly, excites anybody as a potential starter? Because the list looks pretty threadbare, and I think maybe the only one, and we didn't even talk about this guy, Mike White with the Jets. Is there anybody that you could say, boy, that'd be a nice pickup because he could potentially be a useful starter?
It's interesting. I mean, is Drew Lock a free agent?
He's not listed on.
He's not okay.
Over the cap. At least I don't see him. Oh yes, see, there he is. Way down low.
Okay, he is. Okay, so he's someone that, like, you know, is definitely not a surefire starter by any means. But like, he's young enough that I think people still might think there's some potential that's yet to be unlocked there. And Seattle has Geno now. Like, they know, okay, we're going to roll with Geno. So Drew Lock is kind of interesting to me as somebody that maybe someone would go for. I mean, again, I don't think he would come into a situation and be the starter, but would have a chance to compete for a job because I don't think he's been, like, written off yet. So that's, like, the one sort of weird name that I would throw out there. Other than that, you're right. This quarterback class of free agents and, you know, starters who are available is not great. And also, there's not that many in the draft. So there is going to be, like, a musical chair situation that goes on this offseason with quarterbacks, and it'll be interesting to see when it's all said and done, you know, where everything stands, because somebody is going to get left with a very bad situation.
Kalen, I saw on your social media that you are currently on location for the Combine, and Ray keeps giving me a hard time about the Combine, but I love it, and I want to know, if you give us a lay of the land out there, is there buzz around any players besides the obvious ones? What's it like out there?
Yeah, so as far as buzz around players, I am, like, so tunnel vision on random things that I'm working on that I honestly could not give you, like, a list of top prospects, because all of my conversations are just extremely, like, not related to the actual draft. But as far as the Combine goes, I mean, it's a really crazy event. Like, I was chasing somebody from the competition committee down two different hallways yesterday, and unfortunately, I was not wearing sneakers. I was wearing, like, 3-inch platform mules. They're very cute shoes, but not practical for chasing down sources. So this is, like, the type of event where you see someone that you want to talk to and you just have to go after them because you don't know if you're going to run into them again. So it's really fun. It's really interesting. And actually, I had a nice conversation with like George Payton just like an hour ago, because he didn't talk to us for the Broncos story that we did, but I just went up and, you know, introduced myself and we talked a little bit about that. And he was a very nice man. So that was, you know, that was an interesting interaction. So things like that are always happening. Like, you're just walking around and you have no idea, you know, who you're going to run into. And you've got to remember right away, like, why do I need this person? Like, what am I working on that I want to ask them about? It's very stressful. You get really sweaty, but it's very fun.
I have one last question and then we'll let you go. Can you explain the motivation for the Philadelphia Eagles to introduce a proposal to legalize the number 0 as a jersey number? What's the reason for that? Because I don't know of any fan who has said, you know what the NFL really needs? More guys wearing 0.
So the way it was explained to me is that 2 years ago, obviously, they expanded the positions that could wear one through single-digit numbers, so 1 through 19. I guess that's a few double-digit numbers as well. But they opened it up to pretty much any position other than offensive and defensive linemen. So when that happened, you saw a bunch of players. I don't know exactly how many players decided to switch to the single-digit numbers, but there was a significant amount. And with the Eagles in particular, they've got Devontae Smith in number 6. They've got Hassan Reddick at number 7. They have 2 retired numbers in that group. And, you know, when that happened, when you have 90 players in camp, you don't have enough numbers. You're allowed to sort of duplicate numbers at that point. But you're going to wind up with, like, practice squad guys duplicating with guys on the regular roster. And then when the regular season comes, you have to activate them. You've got to switch the jersey numbers around. It becomes like a whole situation. So the way it was explained to me is that the Eagles proposed this as a way to have, like, one more single digit number so that it's a little bit less crowded in there, because for some reason the single digit numbers are, like, very popular and cool. And I would need to ask some players about why that is, but I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of demand from different position groups for those numbers. So by adding a zero, you have like one more.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Not your explanation, but just the rationale. But anyway, the information was very good otherwise. Kaylin Kaler, thanks for joining us. And we'll talk to you soon when something goofy happens at the combine, like the place gets set on fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks. All right. Thanks again, Kaylin. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. See, she can't even be bothered to pay attention to it.
I know. I think you paid her.
I'd have paid her
away from the combine. My combine question.
I'd have paid her for a more frivolous answer to the matter of what the zero jersey number means to players.
Yeah.
But no, she is really good at digging out stuff, like the Wilson stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had to get help from any number of players to get those stories verified, and she was one of three people who worked on it. So it was a pretty exhaustive view of the Russell Wilson thing in general, because his situation is fascinating to me because he was once considered an elite quarterback, not very long ago, but his fall from grace has been relatively precipitous. And this last year, he was genuinely awful.
Right.
On an awful team, in fairness. He was not the reason why the Broncos were not good, but he did nothing to arrest that deterioration. So this is an enormous year for him.
Yeah.
Trying to impress Sean Payton at a time when you have to wonder how much he's got left in the tank.
Who knows what happened with Russell Wilson? I think everybody who, even if you're admitting it or not, I do think that most people don't believe that he's done just based on one really bad year. But if it happens again next year, then anybody who still thinks, all right, maybe it was just an off year, you get rid of Hackett, you do a couple of different things, maybe you'll be all right. But then if that's the case, then I don't know what you do. If he is done, what do you do if you're the Broncos, who you're kind of connected to this guy, you're going to have to pay him something in order to get rid of him. Sean Payton, not too long ago, I think the funniest thing about this whole situation, that Sean Payton not too long ago was, you know, doing his rounds, doing his media thing, and he goes out and he says he wants to go back to, he thinks teams should go back to just what the prototype is for the top, he said a top 10 pick or maybe a top 15 pick prototype. Don't take any QB under 6 foot. Don't take anybody that's undersized. And that was about a month, maybe a month before, maybe less than that, before he accepted the gig to take Russell Wilson and the Broncos, which I did find fascinating, because you've already admitted, I guess you're not drafting him, so it's a bit different. And the quarterback who put Sean Payton in this position, obviously they worked hand in hand, was a guy in Drew Brees who was also undersized.
Yeah, and well, the big problem with Russell Wilson for the Broncos and for whatever Sean Payton wants to do is he's still guaranteed another $124 million. His average salary per year is $49 million,
mm-hmm.
and he's not a free agent until 2029.
It's a long time.
It's an enormous investment for a guy that you might be tempted to chuck after a year, because I don't know how you move that contract if he deteriorates to the point where Sean Payton wouldn't even want him in the building.
2029, and he's 34 now.
Yeah, it was a daft contract. There's no question about it. And even if he had been good this year, you couldn't really project him, based on the number of hits, sacks, and pressures he's faced in his time, both in Seattle and then last year in Denver, to play till he's 40.
No.
One of the things about Brady, for good or ill, is he was kept upright in New England for most of those years. He did not take a lot of frightful hits. He did not take a ton of chances. And between all those things and the fact that he was Brady, he could play that long. But that's an incredible outlier.
Yeah, the Bronco thing, even if Russell Wilson had played well we don't even know if that's good enough to beat the Chiefs. So I think that's the weird thing for me for what the Broncos decided to do. You decided to give him all this money and he's not even in the same stratosphere as Patrick Mahomes, which nobody really is. A couple guys get close. We know Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, those guys get close. But to sign up for this with Russell Wilson for these years in the same division as Patrick Mahomes, that is what is bizarre to me.
The only way that it makes any sense at all, at least in my mind, is that they thought that his relationship in Seattle had deteriorated so much that he'd be delighted to be free. And then they proceeded to give him more money than he could eat, gave him a rookie coach who, frankly, was already shell-shocked by the experience of trying to keep Aaron Rodgers happy.
Right.
So he basically let him have the run of the building. And all that is okay, except that he's on a bad team where he can't save it. Yeah. So he's going to look bad by comparison. And now, immediately, other players start losing confidence in him. They lose confidence in the coach. And you've got a flaming disaster. And that's what's going to mark him, is that he went to a new place, got given the room, and just vomited all over it. And again, he's not the reason why the Broncos were hideous, but he was an example of it.
But even if, I don't even know if peak Russell Wilson, I guess my point is, does peak Russell Wilson even move the needle in the AFC West with Patrick Mahomes just waiting there?
Well, they knew that whatever else they had wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think they...
But you didn't have to pay him this.
Well, you had to pay him something to get him, you know, to get him from other teams that would want him. I mean, the Jets would have paid that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So, you know, the market basically determines what you're going to get paid if you're that kind of guy or that kind of resume. But the baggage that he brought with him, you know, between the beatings he took in the pocket in Seattle, you know, him having the building.
And an office.
And, well, I mean, the whole building, basically, he, you know, he had whiteboards on, you know, on all the walls. He was like the de facto general manager. And it all turned out brutally. But we're going to take a break, because Grandy's waving at me, and either we need to take a break or he's got to go to the bathroom. And if he does have to go to the bathroom, I don't want to know about it. So I'll just tell you that we are presented by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
The Warriors are back in action tonight against Portland, and that means Warriors Live starts at 6 o'clock on 95.7 The Game, presented by Xfinity. Supercharge your home and supersonic Wi-Fi. Unbeatable interest. What am I reading here? Supercharge your home with supersonic Wi-Fi. Unbeatable internet. God, I'm an idiot. Only from Xfinity. And I say that because I am indeed an idiot. Again, Portland tonight in a game that is more important than you would think, because any game that involves anybody from positions 4 to 13 in the Western Conference matters. And we'll have Dax Baxter Holmes from ESPN to talk about Portland at 5 o'clock. And he did a long piece with and about Damian Lillard that got published yesterday. A couple of days after Lillard's 71, but I think it's been in, you know, been in the can for a while. So they decided to spring it right then, because how many times is Damian Lillard going to score more than 60 points, other than the two times he's already done it this year?
So as a writer, is that a thing for different types of pieces that you have? Everyone hears, oh, I have to finish this piece by this time. I got to meet this deadline. But are there also pieces that you write and you think, I'm going to pick and choose where I drop this to hopefully, you know, generate
but
it's a lot?
Not,
of-
it's not your call when it drops.
Okay.
It's the editor's call. And he's probably been assigned to the Lillard story for a while.
Right.
And, you know, they might have run it on a slow day in the NBA. of which tonight is not one of those, and certainly Sunday was not one of those. But when Lillard drops 71, they go, you know what? We got that piece. Let's do it now while he's hot.
Yeah.
Because the one great failing about the NBA is that coverage of the league only hits a few places.
Right.
It hits Miami. It hits New York. It hits L.A. It hits San Francisco to a certain extent, although not all the time. And it almost never gets to Portland because the Blazers don't cast a ton of a shadow.
Yeah.
And Damian Lillard is, you know, part and parcel of that. And he should cast more of a shadow because he's that good a player.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also the kind of player that every fan base says they want. Somebody who basically puts down roots and says, this is where I'm making my stand.
Yeah.
In fact, in Holmes's piece, he says that, he points out only 10 players have ever, you know, who have ever played for 10 more years and only played on one team have won a ring. Now,
really?
That's probably a small sample size because very few players get the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
But this piece is basically Damian Lillard restating again and again that Portland's where he's making his stand and that he doesn't believe they're eliminated from having a championship. But that's the part that is dependent on the general manager, coach, ownership, other players. Because one-man teams never get to do this. They're just not... The sport's not built for one guy to carry you and get you. I mean, Will Chamberlain carried teams for almost a decade, won one title.
Right.
And there's a, I mean, there's a lesson in that. It just, give me the team with the most useful pieces, and I'll tell you, that's the team that has the best chance of winning.
Thinking about the big swings that, let's say, the Nets took, and obviously it didn't work out, and the Suns, and we don't know if it's going to work out or not. By the way, Ray, Kevin Durant expected to play in his first game tomorrow, speaking of the Suns, so that'll be that'll be a sight to see. For Damian Lillard to have this type of love and to be so loyal to the Blazers, do we even know if they've even had conversations? I get it. You don't want to be. Is it the same being joining a super team or creating a super team, right? Were they in the conversation for Kevin Durant? Have they been in these conversations to try to not just tinker here and there and get a GP2 or somebody like that to really take a big swing? We get mad at the Giants, but at least we know the Giants. They went out, they tried to get Aaron Judge, and it didn't work out. I don't ever hear about the Blazers trying to make a big swing, but it not working out. And I know since it's a small market, they have to go through trades and the draft, but because of Damian Lillard and where he is in his career, more so trades, I'm not hearing on them swinging and missing on anything.
That may just be a function of, you know, the punditry not considering the Blazers, you know, worthy of their time. Mm-hmm. It might also be that the Blazers are a conservative operation.
Yeah.
And it might be that they would like to take a swing, but they don't have a package. You know, I mean, just it's, you know, you can't make a trade with somebody if you don't have enough to put on the table, mm-hmm. as we found time and again with the Warriors.
Right.
You know, it's hard to make a deal in the NBA, and it's hard to make a huge deal in the NBA. I mean, Phoenix gets Durant only because they have high-profile players from a team that got to the finals 2 years ago, and had draft choices to throw into the pot. You know, they just happen to have the kind of wherewithal that would appeal to Brooklyn specifically in this situation, because for Kevin Durant, they wanted veterans and picks.
Right.
So that meant there weren't a lot of places that would make sense for Brooklyn.
Yeah, and we'll get into this more with Baxter, but I think that would be... We had the conversation when we were, you know, transitioning in and out. I'm sitting there talking with Guru, and that would be the feeling of, there's nothing negative to say about Damian Lillard and his choice, but that would be the feeling of, I mean, is Dame, we know we don't like it when you get the Russell Wilson situation and he thinks that he is the best thing since sliced bread, and I need this and I need that, but on the exact opposite side of that, somebody like a Dame Lillard. I mean, I'd like to think that, Dame, you're at least in these conversations and saying, hey, are we doing this? Are we doing that? Because then it starts to get into the realm of how much do you actually care if you're not? You shouldn't have to do that because they should do their job. But as we've talked about while I've been filling in here, these owners are making money either way.
But it's not about money in this case. It's about finding that difference-making piece. Mm-hmm. And you don't buy it, you have to trade for it.
Right.
And that means you have to have plenty of draft picks, and you have to have plenty of players on the active roster that will other teams will find appealing. And even in situations like the Durant one, you know, Brooklyn didn't have to move him. You know, they made it clear that they were going to have to be bowled over by an offer. Mm-hmm. You know, the Kyrie Irving deal, they did that sort of on the cheap just because they were fed up with him, but they could have kept Durant. They didn't have to move him, but I think once they moved Irving, I think they realized, you know what, we're half a team, we're trying to stay in the playoff picture in the East. You know, we have a better chance of reverting to the team we were before we brought in Durant and Irving. Let's get a bunch of pieces and a bunch of draft choices because we gave up so many to get Durant in the first place. So I think the circumstances were dramatically different. Phoenix, you know, happened to have what Brooklyn was looking for, and they were willing to roll the dice because I think they viewed themselves as being kind of dead-ended.
Yeah.
And at some point, the window's not going to be more wide open for a Western Conference team than it will be this year.
That's what I'm saying. And
but they had the wherewithal to make that deal where a lot of teams wouldn't have, including Golden State, including Portland.
In terms of just looking at the Blazers and looking at their roster, though, you can't be Damian Lillard and say, hey, I want to win a championship and go out with a roster that looks like this for the rest of your career.
But it's the roster's not his to make up. The roster is the team's roster.
But isn't there some type of middle ground between what Kobe or what LeBron has done and saying, hey, I'm these are the guys I need. You don't need to be LeBron, but just a little bit of, I don't know. In this day and age of reaching out to different players, I'm not trying to be devil's advocate here. I'm just saying, if you're just sitting up there up north chilling, rapping, and there are no reports of Damian, just throw out a text, hey, come join us. And I know he actually did, or was it Damian Lillard's brother or somebody tried to get Kevin Durant. This was back in the summer, but I don't know. I do think some people, and maybe it's just me, feel that there hasn't, Damian Lillard loves to sit here and talk about his loyalty, but we just haven't seen the same passion when it comes to how much he wants to win a championship. Damian Lillard could do whatever he wants in Portland, Ray. Get into it with the GM. Get into it with the owner.
And we don't know that he hasn't.
That's true.
He just hasn't done it where we can see it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem with sort of casting people in that light is we don't know the half of it. Mm-hmm. He might have gone into Joe Cronin on more than one occasion and said, hey, let's make a run at Durant.
Yeah.
And Cronin could say, I'm making phone calls, but I don't have what they want.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think Lillard is a fool, and I don't think he would say, well, I don't care what you don't have, make it anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he knows what the deal is right now. Portland is not in a position to trade for Kevin Durant in that circumstance. The fact is the only piece that they've got that could get a big name is Lillard.
Well, yeah.
But it would have to be Lillard and a bunch of other stuff. And I don't know that they have a bunch of other stuff. And who would that be for? Giannis? I mean,
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
The Warriors are back in action tonight against Portland, and that means Warriors Live starts at 6 o'clock on 95.7 The Game, presented by Xfinity. Supercharge your home and supersonic Wi-Fi. Unbeatable interest. What am I reading here? Supercharge your home with supersonic Wi-Fi. Unbeatable internet. God, I'm an idiot. Only from Xfinity. And I say that because I am indeed an idiot. Portland tonight in a game that is more important than you would think, because any game that involves anybody from positions 4 to 13 in the Western Conference matters. Mm-hmm. And we'll have Dax Baxter Holmes from ESPN to talk about Portland at 5 o'clock. And he did a long piece with and about Damian Lillard that got published yesterday, a couple of days after Lillard's 71. But it's been in the can for a while, so they decided to spring it right then, because how many times is Damian Lillard going to score more than 60 points, other than the two times he's already done it this year?
So as a writer, is that a thing for different types of pieces that you have? Everyone hears, oh, I have to finish this piece by this time. I got to meet this deadline. But are there also pieces that you write and you think, I'm going to pick and choose where I drop this to hopefully, you know, generate
a
lot?
It's not your call when it drops.
Okay.
It's the editor's call. Mm-hmm. And he's probably been assigned to the Lillard story for a while.
Right.
And, you know, they might have run it on a slow day in the NBA. Of which tonight is not one of those, and certainly Sunday was not one of those. But when Lillard drops 71, they go, you know what? We got that piece. Let's do it now while he's hot.
Yeah.
Because the one great failing about the NBA is that coverage of the league only hits a few places.
Right.
It hits Miami. It hits New York. It hits L.A., It hits San Francisco to a certain extent, although not all the time. And it almost never gets to Portland, because the Blazers don't cast a ton of a shadow.
Yeah.
And Damian Lillard is, you know, part and parcel of that. And he should cast more of a shadow, because he's that good a player. Mm-hmm. And he's also the kind of player that every fan base says they want. Somebody who basically puts down roots and says, this is where I'm making my stand.
Yeah.
In fact, in Holmes's piece, he says that, he points out, only 10 players have ever, you know, who have ever played for 10 more years and only played on one team have won a ring. Now,
really?
That's probably a small sample size, because very few players get the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
But this piece is basically Damian Lillard restating again and again that Portland's where he's making his stand, and that he doesn't believe they're eliminated from having a championship. But that's the part that is dependent on the general manager, coach, ownership, other players. Because one-man teams never get to do this. They're just not... The sport's not built for one guy to carry you and get you. I mean, Will Chamberlain carried teams for almost a decade, won one title.
Right.
And there's a lesson in that. It just, give me the team with the most useful pieces, and I'll tell you, that's the team that has the best chance of winning.
Thinking about the big swings that, let's say, the Nets took, and obviously it didn't work out. and the Suns. And we don't know if it's going to work out or not. By the way, Ray, Kevin Durant expected to play in his first game tomorrow, speaking of the Suns. So that'll be a sight to see. For Damian Lillard to have this type of love and to be so loyal to the Blazers, do we even know if they've even had conversations? I get it. You don't want to be. Is it the same being joining a super team or creating a super team, right? Were they in the conversation for Kevin Durant? Have they been in these conversations to try to not just tinker here and there and get a GP2 or somebody like that to really take a big swing? We get mad at the Giants, but at least we know the Giants. They went out and they tried to get Aaron Judge and it didn't work out. I don't ever hear about the Blazers trying to make a big swing, but it not working out. And I know since it's a small market, they have to go through trades and the draft, but because of Damian Lillard and where he is in his career, more so trades, I'm not hearing on them swinging and missing on anything.
That may just be a function of, you know, the punditry not considering the Blazers, you know, worthy of their time. Mm-hmm. It might also be that the Blazers are a conservative operation.
Yeah.
And it might be that they would like to take a swing, but they don't have a package. You know, I mean, just it's, you know, you can't make a trade with somebody if you don't have enough to put on the table, mm-hmm. as we found time and again with the Warriors.
Right.
You know, it's hard to make a deal in the NBA, and it's hard to make a huge deal in the NBA. I mean, Phoenix gets Durant only because they have high-profile players from a team that got to the finals 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and had draft choices to throw into the pot. You know, they just happen to have the kind of wherewithal that would appeal to Brooklyn specifically in this situation, because for Kevin Durant, they wanted veterans and picks.
Right.
So that meant there weren't a lot of places that would make sense for Brooklyn.
Yeah, and we'll get into this more with Baxter, but I think that would be... We had the conversation when we were, you know, transitioning in and out. I'm sitting there talking with Guru, and that would be the feeling of there's nothing negative to say about Damian Lillard and his choice, but that would be the feeling of, I mean, is Dame, we know we don't like it when you get the Russell Wilson situation and he thinks that he is the best thing since sliced bread and I need this and I need that. But on the exact opposite side of that, somebody like a Dame Lillard, I mean, I'd like to think that Dame, you're at least in these conversations and saying, hey, are we doing this? Are we doing that? Because then it starts to get into the realm of how much do you actually care if you're not? You shouldn't have to do that because they should do their job. But as we've talked about while I've been filling in here, these owners are making money either way.
But it's not about money in this case. It's about finding that difference-making piece, mm-hmm. and you don't buy it, you have to trade for it.
Right.
And that means you have to have plenty of draft picks, and you have to have plenty of players on the active roster that other teams will find appealing. And even in situations like the Durant one, you know, Brooklyn didn't have to move him. You know, they made it clear that they were going to have to be bowled over by an offer. Mm-hmm. You know, the Kyrie Irving deal, they did that sort of on the cheap just because they were fed up with him. But they could have kept Durant. They didn't have to move him. But I think once they moved Irving, I think they realized, you know what? We're half a team. We're trying to stay in the playoff picture in the East. You know, we have a better chance of reverting to the team we were before we brought in Durant and Irving. Let's get a bunch of pieces and a bunch of draft choices because we gave up so many to get Durant in the first place. So I think the circumstances were dramatically different. Phoenix, you know, happened to have what Brooklyn was looking for, and they were willing to roll the dice because I think they viewed themselves as being kind of dead-ended.
Yeah.
And at some point, the window's not going to be more wide open for a Western Conference team than it will be this year.
That's what I'm saying. And
but they had the wherewithal to make that deal where a lot of teams wouldn't have, including Golden State, including Portland.
In terms of just looking at the Blazers and looking at their roster, though, you can't be Damian Lillard and say, hey, I want to win a championship and go out with a roster that looks like this for the rest of your career.
But it's the roster's not his to make up. The roster is the team's roster.
But isn't there some type of middle ground between what Kobe or what LeBron has done and saying, hey, I'm these are the guys I need. You don't need to be LeBron, but just a little bit of, I don't know. In this day and age of reaching out to different players, I'm not trying to be devil's advocate here. I'm just saying, if you're just sitting up there up north chilling, rapping, and there are no reports of Damian, just throw out a text, hey, come join us. And I know he actually did, or was it Damian Lillard's brother or somebody tried to get Kevin Durant. This was back in the summer, but I don't know. I do think some people, and maybe it's just me, feel that there hasn't, Damian Lillard loves to sit here and talk about his loyalty, but we just haven't seen the same passion when it comes to how much he wants to win a championship. Damian Lillard could do whatever he wants in Portland, Ray. Get into it with the GM. Get into it with the owner.
And we don't know that he hasn't.
That's true.
He just hasn't done it where we can see it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem with sort of casting people in that light is we don't know the half of it.
Mm-hmm.
He might have gone into Joe Cronin on more than one occasion and said, hey, let's make a run at Durant.
Yeah.
And Cronin could say, I'm making phone calls, but I don't have what they want.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think Lillard is a fool, and I don't think he would say, well, I don't care what you don't have, make it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he knows what the deal is right now. Portland is not in a position to trade for Kevin Durant in that circumstance. The fact is the only piece that they've got that could get a big name is Lillard.
Well, yeah.
But it would have to be Lillard and a bunch of other stuff. And I don't know that they have a bunch of other stuff. And who would that be for? Giannis? I mean, I don't know. But by the way, it's time for your 5 o'clock hour.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.